This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's community access radio station Plains FM 96.9 and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Coming up next, conversations on human rights with Speak Up, Kōrero Tia, here on Plains FM.
E nā mana, e nā reo, e nā hō e whā, tēnā koutou katoa, no mai ki tēne hōtaka, Speak Up, Kōrero Tia. Tune in as our guests Speak Up, sharing their unique and powerful experiences and opinions. And may you also be inspired to speak up when the moment's right. No mai, ki te hōtaka tika tangata, Speak Up, Kōrero Tia. I'm your host, Sally Carlton, and today we're talking about youth activism. It's so fantastic that we've got four guests who are able to share with us their experience and their wisdom. And we've got our youngest ever guest on the show. We've had a few young teenagers, but we've got a 12-year-old here today. So maybe we'll start with you, Lucy, if you could introduce yourself and tell us a bit about you and your work that you're doing at the moment.
Thanks, Sally. Kia ora, I'm Lucy. I go to Beckenham. I'm a Year 8 student. I'm part of the School Strike for Climate National and Christchurch team. So we run strikes multiple times every year. We recently had one on September 27th, which was really, really big. We had like 8,000 people here in Christchurch, so that was really amazing. Nationwide, we had 170,000, so that was like biggest strike in New Zealand, and we're second in the world for the percentage of people in our country in the strike, so that was really cool.
I saw it was like 3.5% of the population or something. That's huge, it's great. Okay, Trixie Bull, how about you?
Kia ora, my name is Trixie Marie. I'm from Aparema College in Riverton. A few months ago, I went to a regional speech competition for Race Unity Awards, which was in Dunedin, and I made it through to the semi-finals, which was held in Auckland, and it was really amazing to hear how many different point of views young kids have, or young students. So I'm really new to this kind of scene of thing, but I'm so proud of Lucy. It's awesome to hear things like that, and I just want to know more. So I'm just here to voice my opinion and to hear more about everyone else's.
And I guess just for people who are listening in, the Race Unity Speech Awards takes place every year. And it's a chance for young people to do, I think it's 7 minutes, isn't it? A 7-minute speech.
Yeah, up to eight minutes. Yeah. So it's just a platform for rangatahi to voice their thoughts on racism.
I've judged quite a few of them, and my goodness, they're always so moving and powerful.
Yeah, everyone's opinion is so different in how they view things. So we all have a similar mindset on how we want the world to be, but everyone has different solutions, and it's really, really fresh to hear different people from all parts of New Zealand.
Very cool. And Ali?
Kia ora. My name is Ali Zuhuri-Dosa. I'm a fourth-year medical student at the University of Auckland, and I'm also a part of the Baha'i community of New Zealand. So I became involved with helping to organize and facilitate the Race Unity Speech Awards and the Hui that happens in conjunction with the national finals every year. And in that way, I've been able to be a part of these youth spaces and hear the discussions that the young people lead around this corridor about race unity and diversity in New Zealand. Equally, I've been involved with the Human Rights Commission, the diversity forums they have every year, trying to attend those and share a view from the Baha'i perspective. I've been really blessed to be able to create space for those younger than me and also those older than me to share their thoughts about racial diversity. And it's been really been inspiring to me to see the innovative and hopeful vision that young people like Trixie and Lucy have to share with us. So, yeah, I'm really happy to be here as well. Thank you.
Thank you. And our final guest, we've got Sylvia Nissen.
Kia ora, I'm Sylvia Nissen. I'm a lecturer in environmental policy at Lincoln University. And I really started becoming really involved in these types of issues over a decade ago when I was in Copenhagen for the climate marches there. And that really transformed everything I did after that. I came home and changed all my areas of study. And I've just been really interested ever since in researching, I guess, the combination of young people's political action and particularly student political action, and then how that intersects with environmental change. I wrote a book that came out earlier this year about student political action in New Zealand, which was based off my PhD research. And so it's a real privilege to be part of this conversation today with these three other amazing rangatahi.
Trixie, you've mentioned you're quite new to this space and you've sort of talked about how you got into it, but for the rest of you, what was it that drove you to get involved? Was there sort of an aha moment? Sylvia, you mentioned going to the climate march, for example. Ali, did you have a moment?
I wouldn't say there's one specific aha moment for me. I moved to New Zealand about 6 years ago, so I migrated here from Jamaica. And in the process of understanding New Zealand and the different diverse cultures that live and make this place their home, I had to create like opportunities to talk to other people and to learn from them. And one of the spaces that I was blessed to be in was the Race Unity Hui, where I was just an attendee for the first couple of years. And then I was asked to help with facilitating some of the small group sessions. And in that, you get to see so many diverse perspectives, people who have so much passion and so many hopeful, inspiring ways to look at the world. And in that way, you feel really motivated to be a part of that and to keep attending those kinds of spaces. And I guess through my involvement with the Baha'i community, we do a lot of community-based, youth-led initiatives around education of younger people to do with spiritual values and spiritual education. So that's another thing which I do in my free time, which I wouldn't say is activism on a national level, but it's definitely activism on a local level.
Like Ellie, I didn't really have an aha moment because I've kind of always been passionate about justice, but it was kind of as soon as I found out about the magnitude of the climate crisis, I was just kind of like, why is there not anyone doing anything about this? Like, it just seemed so obvious that people would take action because it's their lives at risk. So then I was kind of driven to make change before I even kind of realized that I was at that time a little bit of a lone voice in my community, but in my community, there were also other people that like stepped up to help once there was a platform for them to do so. So that was really cool to see.
The topic today is, I had a real difficulty trying to decide what to call it, youth advocacy, youth activism, youth having a voice, youth participation, those sorts of ideas. And I guess I'd be quite keen to hear about what is it that you all understand by those kinds of concepts? And how is it that you do activism or you do advocacy?
Well, I suppose how I view it is just kind of like making a difference, like making a positive difference. And I think everyone's going to have a different view of activism and leadership, but I think that's really important as well. Incorporating those views into what you do to like make it unique, because we have so many young people doing such cool stuff and everyone has their own perspective of what it is. In my perspective, I think it's kind of like stepping up, potentially even like doing stuff out of your comfort zone that might not directly benefit you that you can see right now, but in the future it will. And that it's also going to better for other people. We're lucky here in New Zealand that at the moment we're not really seeing the effects of climate change, but the Pacific is. And like we need to be there to support them. And I feel like that's kind of part of activism and leadership, is to support others.
Very nicely put.
I completely agree. I feel like as young people, we have a very unique perspective of society, and we are able to ask those difficult questions that maybe those older than us have become quite complacent to accept an answer that has always been given to us. We have these questions and we seek answers for them. And a part of that is creating spaces to discuss things, having our voice heard, and asking why is it like this and how can we improve this current situation, and highlighting the pertinent issues which we feel are really important to us.
Sylvia, from your research, have you got a general sense of what it is or how people do it?
No, I don't think there's any one way to do it. I mean, broadly, it's this idea of people trying to make change together. And so it's a very collective process, and it's a process that requires a lot of connection. And I can understand why you struggled to name what the session's about, because there is no one way to do it. And in fact, that's a really good thing. You don't want a monoculture of activism in a way. There's so many different forms of engagement that is coming through, and I think it's all broadly driven by these desires to do things differently and having, in a way, a fresh pair of eyes and looking critically at a lot of the big problems that we're facing and thinking, well, we actually have to change this. And even if we might not fully know how, it's still something needs to change. And so you're seeing a whole range of different ways of engaging with that.
Yeah, I think one thing that strikes me is how people do it. So it can be anything from, you know, have you heard of clicktivism? You know, clicking the, liking the buttons on social media, right through to fundraising, right through to staging the protests like you guys have been doing, a whole lot of different things. And it could be quite passive and it could also be really, really active, depending on how people are wanting to engage, I suppose.
And I'd also add in, it's not just sort of clicktivism and protest, there's also guerrilla gardening and poetry and a lot of art involved with the new protest we're seeing.
So cool. Okay, we might have our first break and our first song, and then we're going to continue with our discussion. Speak Up Kore Rotia. We're speaking with Ali, Trixie Marie, Lucy and Sylvia about youth activism. And in this segment, I'd like to think about what kind of factors enable youth to have a voice. Trixie, Maria, given that you have recently come to this, perhaps you might be a good person to kick us off. What was it that enabled you or encouraged you or facilitated you to take that first step?
So where I come from is just a little small town in like the very bottom of the South Island. And I find that a lot of the families there are Māori, but no one wants to speak up and stand for their culture, which is really sad. And I wanted to be the person that made a change. Where I come from, even if it's just me at the moment, small steps, but I have got a few other people who are on board too. We do things like organise kabaka and we do wakaama and we try and do everything that we can, like help out at the marae, just to try and bring all of that culture back. I know that a lot of people are embarrassed to speak te reo Māori and I don't want that to be happening. I want everyone to be proud of where they come from. Race Unity Awards speeches just seem like a first step. So I went there and I did my speech. I used the marae as a microcosm for something that New Zealand could follow.
With your example of your process of becoming active within this specific discourse of race unity and ethnic and race relations, you had a moment of I guess, race consciousness. You looked in your society and you thought, this is it's an issue which I'm concerned about, which is like, I guess, Māori involvement in their society and wanting to see themselves participating more actively. And you said, I have opinions about this, which I've formed, and then I would like those to be shared. And I guess in that situation, there was a platform that was created for the youth to share. That's, I guess, the responsibility of the rest of society to create space and a platform for youth's voices and their opinions to be heard by more, and also to have dialogue and discussion between youth.
So you've been lucky in that maybe your teacher told you about the speech awards and that provided you with a platform.
Yeah, we have an amazing English teacher at Aparima College. Her name is Mrs. Grove, and she is always encouraging kids to partake in things to do with helping fight climate change and to help fight racism. She wants everyone to be united and think the same and the world to be a better place than what it is now. So it's good that we have people who back us up.
I suppose for me, like, there were a number of platforms. In my school, I was able to start a group called Global Group with some of my friends, but it wasn't like a platform that was already there. Like, I couldn't join a group. The existing ones were kind of about composting and stuff like that, which is really important, but we kind of thought, well, first of all, we need to actually teach kids about climate change. So we were 10, but we were like, you know, we're going to start this group and teach kids about climate change from what we've learned off the internet. Yeah, it was actually like all of the knowledge that I have now, I'd kind of sustained from back then, and all of it seems relevant, but it's changing. Like, there needs to be more platforms for people to like be able to speak up, because not everyone has the capacity to start a group in their school or start a strike and stuff. Like, there needs to be the actual platforms for people to do that, especially in their own communities and smaller communities.
What I'm hearing from you, you've had a supportive teacher, you've had a supportive school, and having something that helps you put your visions into reality, I suppose. You've also mentioned the internet, Lucy, and I suppose that's got to be very, very powerful for young people in terms of having a voice.
I think social media, if it's used correctly, it's a huge tool and it's super powerful. Like, we don't even have very many followers on our Christchurch Instagram page, but like the people who do follow us, they will come to our strikes because they follow us. And that's just like the power of social media when it's used right.
We live in a really connected world now, and I guess this is something that our generation of youth has, which is different from our parents' generation, and we can use that to our advantage. And as you said, like, if used correctly, social media has a very powerful tool for raising awareness, for creating a bit of a buzz and a social movement, which otherwise wouldn't occur because there wouldn't have been that communication of ideas that is so fast and so available and so accessible to so many of us. But even then, like, there's still some of us who don't have access to that. And how do we reach those people and share these ideas with those who probably are most vulnerable to the issues that we're advocating for, like racial injustice or like the effects of climate change.
I definitely agree with both of you, but then there's also that side of social media that can be bad. So what Lucy was saying about using it correctly is really important. The things like fake news also about climate change and things like that, you've got to be really careful what you read.
Yeah, or at least read it with a mind that you've checked out a lot of different sources.
Yeah.
And I think it's really important to, like, no matter what you read, to stay positive, not to double guess yourself and be like, oh, am I actually, like, doing the right thing? Because some people will post that, like, people who are protesting should be jailed, they should be banned from doing that. It's just, like, one person's opinion. It's not as big as, like, your whole movement's opinion. And I think it's really important to stay true to yourself, even in the face of, like, adversity and people not agreeing with you.
Yeah, I'd like to get a bit more into the challenges as we move forward, because I think you guys, the climate strikers, have faced quite a few of them, and it's difficult, I would imagine, you know, trying to face all of those. Sylvia, from your perspective, have you got anything to add what might facilitate or enable youth participation?
Yeah, I think it's interesting because it's also in the context, there's so much discussion around how young people are apathetic and they don't vote, and there ends up being quite a big focus on the response to that being that we need to teach people more about how politics works and the rules of it. And it's been very interesting listening to this discussion because it really highlights that what matters just as much, if not more, is having those spaces for connection and opportunities for people together to speak up, and whether that's marae or in school or just those kind of spaces and opportunities for groups to get together. And I think a lot of our discussion doesn't often end up in that space. Often we just focus on just teaching people a bit more about our political processes rather than thinking about those wider supports in place.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point because, like, voting works for some people, but it doesn't work for other people. Like, certain things that we have that enable everyone has a voice works for some of our society, but some people won't ever be able to get access to that information about politics. It's not going to be a reality for so many people, and so many people might be encouraged not to vote. And I think it works for some people, but it doesn't work for others. Like, so many things. If people are going to be, like, active in their society, they're probably going to need to do it in a way that works for them, in a way that feels supportive of their needs.
One other thing that I'd like to bring up in terms of enabling, supporting youth voice is leaders. You guys are all leaders in your various spaces. You've gotten people trying to celebrate their Māori heritage. You're organizing these amazing mass strikes. And, you know, we look at the news and a day doesn't go by that we don't see Greta Thunberg in the news and various other youth leaders. And the effect of that is huge, as far as I'm concerned, as somebody looking into this space.
I think that there's, like, definitely space, like, to have leaders. I think it's really important because once you get past that, oh, but that's them, like, I couldn't do that. Once you get past that, you can see that, like, Greta Thunberg, for so many young New Zealanders, she's probably a similar age, and you can actually see that, like, oh, she's, like, a similar age to me, and I could do that. Like, that's something I could do. Like, it's not just something that someone halfway across the world can do. Like, I can do it here in my own community. I think that's really important to recognise.
Yeah, I think good leadership and good role models, like people like Greta, who show what's a possibility for yourself, and they also not only inspire, but they mobilise other people into action. So they kind of lead a march, in a sense, and give a sense of direction as well. But I don't think it should just be, like, a few key people. It does have to be a collective movement where we're all building understanding and building capacity to carry out this really important work that we've identified.
Do you think of yourselves as leaders?
I don't know. I guess sometimes people are like, oh, yeah, you're, like, a leader in your community. But I don't generally give myself that title. Or I guess in the Baha'i community, which is the main, like, space that I operate in, which I do most of my youth activism, everyone does kind of have a voice, and it's very much a shared consultative process about what we're doing and what the direction that we're taking is. But yeah, there are some people who, I guess, shoulder more of the responsibility than others, or who are more likely to have their voice heard because of, you know, their involvement in the things.
I don't know. I suppose I see, like, the whole New Zealand strike team as a leader in itself, but it's, like, a lot of collective people as well. Like, it's everyone who's joined together. And even though we come together with the same problem in mind, we all have so many different views, like so many different views on how to go about changing. And then there's a global community as well. I don't know. It's kind of like, I think the idea of a leader being like someone who steps up, but someone that steps up so that other people can like step up themselves and join a community together. Like, there's no such thing as a leader if you don't have people who are together with you, because you're just leading yourself. So you need people to believe in you and step up themselves.
Struggling to find like the right words that are in my head. But everything that everyone's saying is, I'm just trying to process it all.
This might be a good opportunity for you to tell us about the marae.
At the marae, we have all of the key competencies that are in a national curriculum. So we have like supporting others and working together, collaboration and all of that. And all of the morals that as tangata whenua we show on the marae, I feel that if everyone learned the morals and the tikanga, and if it was put out into the world, how much better and easier and how much nicer things would be. In the marae, it's not always nice, but the way that people are and how they're real, I think it'd be really nice if we could put that into the world. Yeah, I'm not too sure how to say it. Do you know what I mean?
I think it probably ties in really well with this idea of leadership and it being a community that has to do it.
It's a really interesting discussion about leadership, because often we fixate on single leaders to make sense of a much bigger movement. And it, in a way, it makes it simple to tell a story as a movement being led by one person, because we're really not very good at having that language and being able to tell those stories about collectives and communities and how those evolve over time, like what you're struggling to get the words for what happens on the marae. It's part of a wider problem that we have about how we talk about these types of collective moments.
I think we might have our next song, and then I'd like to come back and think about some of the challenges that you've faced in terms of doing youth activism.
This song's really exciting. We've actually got Lucy, who's going to be singing her very own composed song for us. This is only the second time we've done this on Speak Up Kōrero Tia. What a cool thing to do. Thanks, Lucy.
I started guitar 3 years ago, and I wrote this song to kind of acknowledge rising up and standing up and living what you believe in, especially when it comes to climate change. So, yeah, this is a song that I wrote called Rise Up.
Rise up, share your voices, stand up, make your choices. This moment defines us. This moment defines us. Rise up, raise your voices, stand up, live your choices. This moment defines us. This moment aligns us. Rise up, raise your voices, stand up, love your choices. This moment defines us, our planet requires us.
We're speaking with Ali Zahuradosa, Trixie Marie Bull, Lucy Gray, and Sylvia Nissen about youth activism. We've been talking about some of the factors that might enable youth to have a voice, but I know that there are a lot of challenges as well. We have touched on some of them, but I'd like to get into them in quite a lot more detail. Lucy, you mentioned some of the criticism that you guys have faced.
A lot of people critique us because they either, like, I'm not trying to put people into boxes, but often it's not just because they are angry or they dislike what we're doing. It's because they're like, they're scared for themselves. And we're trying to create systematic change. It's like people in the farming and coal industry, that's like all they've known. Most likely their grandfather probably did it. Their great grandfather might have even done it. And this is like part of their heritage. And they were being told years ago that they're being providing for the community and that they're heroes of the local community because they are providing. And now they're kind of being pinholed, like, you're the problem. Like, we need to get away from using your resources. And that's a really hard thing to come to terms with, especially if you've been doing it for so long. So I think it's really important that we don't just, like, pinhole people, because if we're saying, well, like, farmers, coal, it's your problem. Like, it's all of our problems. It's all of our responsibilities. And we've had some negativity, but we've had a lot of positivity. With challenges, I think one of the biggest challenges is that with any activism, you're dealing with a problem. And with climate change for youth, like, it's such a big problem, like, and it has such a huge impact on your mental health and well-being. For a lot of people I know in our movement, and for me as well, it's like what helps us to get less involved in like the scary facts is that we're taking action and we can kind of see the effects of that. And that's what helps us to continue going and not give up, because it's just too hard, it's too big, it's too scary, because you can see like the action and it does make a difference. So seeing that can help your well-being.
Everyone needs to understand that no matter what you do in life, there's always going to be people that disagree with you.
Yeah.
And that have different views. If you want to do something, you have to continue to do it no matter what the other people say. If you want to show that you're proud for doing something and you want to make a change, you just got to keep going. Little steps, but you'll get there. Because there's always going to be people who are negative, disagree, say nasty things.
I imagine it must be particularly difficult when you are facing criticism from adults. They're supposed to be in a place of supportiveness and responsibility and leadership, I guess, if we're going to think about that word.
A lot of adults say to our movement, it would be more powerful if you striked on the weekends, your strikes don't make a difference. Like, when in 12 years, what's going to happen when the climate is fine? Like, what are you going to do? And I think it's just important that we recognise that as youth, we do have power, and there are people who are listening. There are people who are not, but there are people who are listening. And I think it can be really hard when you are faced with people who are older than you and are supposed to be in a position of responsibility and power, say that, you know, the strikes are not the most effective way. Kids just want to get off school. They're going to drive up to the strike in an SUV. Saying that is quite belittling, especially if you're already young like me and you don't need people to make you feel even younger. It can be quite belittling. But like, we've got a whole team behind us, and I think that's what makes us powerful, is we can just shrug it off. And it's hard, but you know, you have to try and just be like, and there are so many people that support us, so we just kind of have to focus on that and realize that it's always going to be difficult. As Trixie said, there's always going to be people that are not supportive of what you're doing. So you just kind of have to just let it go and be like, everyone is entitled to their own opinion.
One other challenge I would imagine that you probably face is you have busy lives. You're at school or university. You know, you've got responsibilities at the Marae. You've got responsibilities to your community and your families. And the things that you're doing are in some ways extracurricular, even if they are quite all-consuming. How do you deal with all of that?
Yeah, I think that's one of the biggest challenges that youth who do have passion for social issues and have a really strong sense of justice face, is that they're trying to balance being a young person with a school commitments, family commitments, maybe other cultural commitments, and then also wanting to act on this consciousness that they've been able to raise in themselves. And I feel like it's about finding a balance. It's about remembering your why. Like, why are you passionate for what you're doing? What's the purpose for the school strikes? What's the purpose behind having a discussion about racial injustices, and what are we working towards? So once you have that reminding of why you're doing it, then it is a bit easier to motivate yourself. And that's where it all comes from. It's from your inner motivation. But I feel like also having a really strong social support network and really supportive family and friends who also understand your why and who are willing to back you and to create space and facilitate your life in a way which is going to allow you to be active in these different spaces. And like for Trix, it's being able to have family that's willing to wake up at like who knows what time this morning to drive her 45 minutes to the airport in Invercargill so she could fly up to Christchurch. I'm sure you can't drive it, you're 12, so I'm sure your parents have to drive you everywhere you need to go, for meetings, for strikes, for different activities to have your voice be heard and to progress this really important thing for you. I mean, in the same way, like my family is really supportive. I'm still a full-time med student and that takes a lot of time, but because I know why I'm doing what I'm doing, then it does motivate me to keep at it.
One other issue I imagine that you may face or may not is peer pressure. Particularly, I mean, the school strikes for climate are a very big global movement, and is there pressure for people to take part? And if so, is that a good thing?
It's in different ways. Like, some people will pressure us and say like you need to get mural candidates up on the stage and tell them what you want to see them do, and you need to get the National Party up at your strikes and tell them that they're doing the wrong thing, and you need to do this and that, and people need to participate in the strikes. And from a strike perspective, from an organizer perspective, we're a non-partisan organization, so we can't side with any party, and we don't, because we're wanting government change, not just changes in individual parties. In terms of peer pressure of like attending strikes, I think for some people it is really hard, because in my friendship group even, like all my friends are super supportive, which is amazing. And some people at my school, I know that they're not able to participate because their parents aren't supportive, or they just have no way to get there, or some people won't want to participate. And like there is some pressure, but I feel like they kind of have to take a stand in themselves and not just listen to others and go like, oh, if you're going, then I'll go. Like, if you're going, it's because like you're passionate about what is happening, not because someone else has like told you to. And it is hard. Yeah, I don't think that's something that we've really had a huge struggle with, but it's definitely something that has been difficult.
One other point I wanted to bring up that from my perspective might be a challenge is, do you ever get frustrated that things aren't moving along? And that probably comes along with being young and having no political voice in terms of voting as being a key mechanism for change. Right, I open it up for the floor.
It's really frustrating, actually. At our school, everyone has different opinions, and I feel like I'm always fighting just to even have a say in things, because everyone else shuts you down really quick, and I want to be really careful about what I say, because even though I'm proud Māori, I'm also really proud of my Irish and Scottish, my Pākehā mum. But seeing how washed out our Māori culture is at the moment, that's why I'm focusing on that. You've got to be really careful. Sometimes people like to say things like, oh, you're pale skin, you know, you can't always be fighting for Māori.
I've been in that situation before. I'm part of a kapahaka group. I'm part of Te Reo Extension. And we do go to the cultural festival. And I was in my uniform. And someone walked past and was like, oh, you're Pākehā wearing Māori clothes. That doesn't work. And it's like, well, it's not about who you identify as. It's about what you advocate for.
Exactly. And do you have to be of a certain ethnicity or culture to be able to connect with and value the voices and also want to support that movement? I guess not, and I don't think so.
When it comes to activism, it's playing the long game in a way, and there are short-term wins that can be made, but looking at those, certainly as a researcher of political participation, I'm really aware that often we've missed the big underlying shifts that happen, and often in our media commentary and things like that as well. We talk about things like social movements and activism as something that's spontaneous and that it comes from nowhere. And actually, it doesn't. I mean, even something like the school strikes. I mean, yes, it took Greta Thunberg to sit down in front of the Swedish parliament to catalyse that movement. But that movement didn't come from nowhere. I mean, groups like Lucy's group were already getting together then and talking about climate change. And there was a whole range of other groups within New Zealand, for example, that were organising around this. And Greta's actions brought all of that together. But we sort of miss that there's all this organising already happening, and when they all come together, you can see these kind of quite amazing shifts happen very fast. And so even when it's really frustrating and seems like nothing is happening, often a lot is happening, and we often miss it.
I think that's a good point to bear in mind, happening below the surface, perhaps below the radar.
I guess it's also about being process-oriented instead of results-oriented. We're carrying forward a process of change that, as you said, is a long game. So it's not about seeing the results tomorrow and saying, okay, like, we've accomplished our task, but it's having that vision of what are we working towards and how long is it going to take to get there.
Perfect place for our final song, because in our final segment, we're going to be thinking about what do you hope for the future and how we're going to get there.
Ujjia teri to, ujjia teri to te hara keke, keifra te ko ma ko, ki mai kwe.
To Speak Up Kōrero Te on Plains FM 96.9. We're going to think about now what would our youth activists like to see happen in their youth activist spaces. And Sylvia, perhaps we'll just kick off with you. As a researcher, what would you like to see happen? And then we'll hear from our other panellists.
I'd like to see the voting age lower to 16.
Yeah, I would agree. I was listening to you talk, Lucy, and thinking, there is no reason you should not be voting. Absolutely none at all.
And I think it's also about understanding, even if someone is doing really good stuff and they have ideas, but they're not necessarily going to put them into action. They're saying, I'll do this, I'll do this, I'll do this. And they're like a parliament candidate. You have to understand that voting for one person, even if they have really good ideas, but they're not going to get very many votes, is almost giving a vote to someone who necessarily doesn't have the same views as you. And I think it's really important to know that, because people say, like, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this, as we know, they don't always follow up with that. And that's something that is really easy to get drawn into a trap, because they're so convincing. And it's like, yeah, it's really important to understand that.
I'm keen to hear from you, Lucy. what would you like to see achieved within this movement?
Well, we have four key demands. So our first demand is that government declares a climate and ecological crisis or emergency. Our second demand is that government, because of like the Pacific is struggling and we are not acknowledging that enough, we need to actually support them. And we also want to see them actually rebuilding a renewable and sustainable economy and bring everyone with us in a just transition. We don't want people left behind who have been taken out of their jobs. Like, you can't put a farmer into an accounting business. Like, you have to use people's skill sets that they already have. Another demand is that they stop all coal and oil extraction. That includes ending current agreements they have with coal and oil industries. And I think it's really important to acknowledge that the zero carbon bill as it is not going to
achieve that.
And we need to put it into practice where it's actually all parties are supporting it and actually it's going to make a difference. So we need there to be a methane statement more clearly. There needs to be actual consequences if people do not meet these targets, and it needs to be legally enforceable, because if it's not, then it's like a party can come in and just take it out, and it needs to be like enforceable, like the justice system is enforceable. Like, a party can't just come in and take out the justice system. That would not align with the beliefs of society. So it needs to be as strong as that, and it needs to be as accountable.
I'd just like to say that the way you speak is beautiful. Like, it's
very articulate.
Moving. In the future, I want everyone to be happy. There's no need to be hurtful or be discriminatory because of where someone comes from, what they believe in. I think it's just really dumb how people do that. I'm really good at using big words, like you guys, but I just want everyone to be happy.
I think that's also very beautiful.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. Like, it's so simple, but it's just...
It's not, though. It's, yeah, something you got to work towards.
It's such a simple concept, but it seems so hard to, like, accomplish. Mm.
Yeah, I think a happy society is a productive and harmonious society. And I guess my vision, which is partly from the Baha'i perspective, is that we have a vision for a harmoniously united world and society, which embraces diversity, which sees difference as a good thing, as a tool for innovation and for the development of new ideas, for learning from other people. I feel like in New Zealand, we're really, really blessed with a really diverse physical environment, beautiful physical environment, and we should mirror those attributes in our social interactions as well, and want to see vibrant communities where people feel valued and that their cultural and religious practices are honoured and also uplifted by others.
That seems like a very lovely place to end our conversation. Kia ora, mō te wā. Thank you so much for taking the time.
I'm quite honoured and humbled to be part of this kōrero.